We are now in the generations of Isaac, the Toledot of Isaac. And in this section, we'll see God's plan continue to move forward. Again, that foundation laid down in the life of Abraham, it's going to move forward and everything. But another part of what we'll see in this section, okay, so last time with Abraham, we saw this really this emphasis on Abrahamic covenant faith. We'll still see those elements at play here. But what we're also going to see, kind of the main point of this section as we think of like the life of Isaac and Jacob, especially. Let's pull it up. Is this aspect where the God is going to show that he is with his people. Okay? So essentially like God with them. God is with them. That's really kind of the main point here. And so if you kind of look through, there's going to we'll encounter this repetition throughout this section of the Lord being with them. Like God will tell them, says, I will be with you. The people themselves recognize God has been with me. Even other people are recognizing, hey, God is with you. And so that is really the emphasis of all that. And so, again, foundation for kind of the nation in general. And so this is going to apply to Israel as well, that they're going to understand. And if you think back when Moses is writing this, the Israelites are on the verge of like the conquest and different things that are going to be coming up here. And so this is important for the nation to understand that God will be with them as well. The same goes for them. God will be with them and will fight for them. That's really what you'll see throughout the life of Isaac and Jacob, okay, in this section. All right. Okay, so first event we have here is the birth of Esau and Jacob. And so, again, Isaac, Rebekah, they get married, all that. But what do we know about Rebekah? It says in verse 21 that she was what? Of chapter 25, verse 21, what do we know about Rebekah? She was what? Barren. Okay, who else was barren?
Sarah.
Okay, connected with that. And what we see, kind of this theme starting to develop, and what we kind of see all throughout the Old Testament especially, is this theme of barren women conceiving and bearing a kid, and that kid ends up being very significant. Okay, that's not like a small thing to have someone who's barren and then gives birth to a child. But what we see throughout scripture is that is like a kind of signal for us of like, hey, someone important is being born here. Okay, and so that's going to be a common thing throughout. But on kind of a side note with that, of if you want to think of how would you have like a birth that kind of even trumps a barren woman conceiving and giving birth, how do you trump that?
A virgin
giving birth, right? Like, and so even the birth of Christ, right? The birth of Jesus is to show that the most important person, right, is coming. And so that's a huge sign for that. Okay, so Rebekah ends up conceiving, and while she is pregnant, she has two sons, that are struggling against each other in her womb. And the Lord declares kind of about this that the older shall serve the younger, right? He talks about like there'll be two nations that come from these kids. And then he makes that statement in chapter 25, verse 23, that the older shall serve the younger. Okay, and so again, we see the Lord ordaining the destinies of not only like the children, but also the nations, the resulting nations. And so the kids are born, Esau comes out first, and you have like Jacob holding by the heel, right? Like kind of right there as well. And what you need to understand about Jacob and what kind of the name suggests is that really Jacob is kind of like a schemer, right? He's a schemer. And we're going to see that all throughout his life, okay? This idea of him always trying to scheme and kind of do things to work out his own kind of plan. All right. And so these two kids are born, and this section kind of ends with, as the boys grow up, Esau was a skillful hunter. Jacob was kind of dwelt in tents, like more like didn't go out and hunt type of thing. All right, so that's kind of them. And then that takes us into this important section, right, where Esau sells his birthright. And again, maybe this is familiar, where comes about a time where as Jacob was cooking some stew and all that, Esau comes in from the field, exhausted, hungry, all that, which might be slightly ironic because wasn't he the skillful hunter? Shouldn't he have got something to eat, right? But he's hungry, wants Jacob to give him some of that red stew, which literally just means like red stuff, actually, like in Hebrew. Like we say red stew, but it's just like red stuff. And Moses kind of points out that that's like where he got the name Edom, which that's the nation that comes from Esau's Edom. And so, again, means that kind of idea of red stuff. And so that's this kind of continual reminder to Edom of and his descendants of kind of like, hey, remember what you gave up to for some red stuff, right? For some stew, what you sacrificed for that. And what did he sacrifice? What did he give in exchange for this stew or this red stuff? What did Jacob want? The birthright. Okay, he wanted the birthright. And so the birthright, significant kind of not only in terms of like possessions, okay, of who would kind of be that heir in a sense, but also in the sense of kind of continuing the family heritage, okay? Continuing the family heritage, which in this case, like what would be given to like the son of Isaac as kind of part of this birthright is what? The right to continue the Abrahamic covenant and all that that's connected with that, right? So this is a big deal. This is very significant, this birthright. And so you have Jacob, who has a strong desire to obtain this, even if he's kind of does it by scheming, right? Again, kind of scheming here. But that stands in stark contrast to Esau, who the text says what? Despised his birthright. He didn't care about any of that. He didn't care about continuing the family heritage, which included the Abrahamic covenant. He didn't care about that. But we see Jacob did, okay? And then kind of next few verses of chapter 26, as we roll into chapter 26 here, just significance of this section is God reaffirming his promises to Jacob, okay? Again, communicating that the Abrahamic covenant is in fact going through him, all that, it's continuing. But notice verse 3, where he makes this mention, sojourn in this land, and what? I will be with you. And will bless you. So again, this emphasis of God is with them, okay? God declaring, I will be with you, is this theme here. All right, and then we have Isaac and Abimelech kind of at work here again, and we see Isaac kind of pull a play out of his father's playbook here, where he claims that his wife is his sister and all that kind of a thing going on. But again, we see what happens. God protects Isaac in the same way he protected Abraham, which again shows what? That element of the, I will bless those who bless you, I will curse those who curse you, that is still at play, that is still in effect with Isaac, which means what? The Abrahamic covenant is continuing. Okay? All right. And then we see God increasing his wealth, his crops grow like a hundredfold, all that. So God is making them into this great nation as he has promised. And then the last couple verses of this chapter make mention that Esau marries, took wives from the Canaanites. Okay? Which, why was this bad? Who advised not taking wives from the Canaanites? Abraham. That's what he advised his servant to not let Isaac do. And Isaac's son Esau is doing that very thing. Okay? And so we see, again, like Esau's going to continue to like kind of disqualify himself further and further from that chosen line. All right. And then chapter 27, where you have, again, kind of another famous story here where this blessing comes, and this is the one where Isaac kind of calls Esau to him and says, like, hey, go make me, like, go out, hunt something, make me the food I like, all that, and then I will bless you. Okay? Is kind of that idea. And what's kind of interesting here, right? Because this blessing, again, it ties in with that birthright and seems to be kind of that more official, kind of formal acknowledgement of who the heir is. Okay? And this formal acknowledgement. So it links with that birthright. And so the blessing seems to be that kind of final acknowledgement of, yes, this is the guy. Okay? And so, if you remember this, like Isaac tells Esau, go do all that. Rebekah overhears and her and Jacob start scheming kind of a plan. But before we kind of get into that, do you remember what's weird about Isaac doing this? What did the Lord declare about these kids? Yeah, the older shall serve the younger. So who should Isaac be actually calling in to bless? Jacob, right? And so we focus on the scheming of kind of Rebekah and Jacob, but who's also kind of scheming here? Isaac with Esau, right? This is not how it should have played out. He should have understood that this is Jacob that you're supposed to be doing this, not Esau. And so he is also scheming as well. Okay. Back to this. So while Esau's out hunting, Rebekah gets Jacob and kind of like, hey, go get me some animals from out in the yard or whatever, and I'll prepare them. And they develop this whole scheme, right? And you guys remember this where Jacob's in like, well, like Esau has a bunch of hair all over him. I don't, right? And so they kind of get hair from the goats they killed, patch that all up, and kind of this whole scheme, which seems to be almost like kind of foolproof, right? Until what happens? Do you remember what kind of starts to break this plan down?
His voice,
right? He speaks, right? Pretty hard to imitate, right? Like other people's voices too well, especially, yeah, like a sibling. And so, right, as soon as Jacob speaks, well, you have Isaac kind of like, is that? That doesn't sound like Esau, right? That doesn't sound like Esau. And what? This should have sabotaged like the whole plan. The whole plan should have just fell apart at this moment. But what? It ends up working. Why? Because God, right? Because God caused it to work. There is no reason that this should have worked, but it worked to accomplish his plan. And so this is an important reality because we're going to see time and time again in the life of Jacob this common theme where Jacob will scheme and try to do stuff, and then the Lord will intervene and help him and will keep the plan moving forward. Okay, and so I had one professor who kind of described this idea of like as Jacob schemes, but God redeems. Okay, Jacob schemes, but God redeems. And that's really, we're going to see that throughout, where Jacob has all these interesting schemes that you're kind of like, yeah, that doesn't seem like a great idea. But what? Things end up panning out, not because his scheme is so great and elaborate, but because what? God is with him. Okay, God is with him. Okay. All right, and so even though their scheme kind of works, where like he gets the blessing, all that, it doesn't fully end up super well because what? Does Esau respond too kindly to this? No, he wants to kill him and all that, and so Jacob is then sent away. Okay, so Jacob's sent away, so he's no longer in the land, right? He's not in the land anymore. That's a big deal. And so he goes to Rebekah's relatives in Padan Aram. And they tell him, right, to find a wife there and don't take a wife from the Canaanites. And hearing that, Esau then just marries another Canaanite, right? Like, it's like, oh, you don't want to marry Canaanites? I'll do that even more, right? Like, and so again, just kind of going down that, digging himself in a deeper hole there and all that. And so back to Jacob as he's on his way to the relatives. He stops at this place that eventually becomes Bethel. It's Luz, but then ends up name is later Bethel. And while he was there, do you guys remember, like, he has this dream? And what did he dream? Do you guys remember what he saw? By chance? I'm doing a lot of Bible trivia on you guys tonight. Yeah, the ladder, like connecting heaven and earth, and what's ascending and descending on it? Angels, right? Angels ascending and descending, right? And really, the dream seems to emphasize that God is present, and again affirms what we've been saying, that God is with Jacob. Okay, that's what he is affirming. God has not abandoned his people, but rather he is with them. Okay? And I don't know, you guys remember later on, jump ahead many thousand years, but to the time of Jesus in John 1, when he makes this statement of, and you will see angels ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Okay, do you remember him kind of saying that statement? And what's kind of the point with that as well? That he's saying what? God is, like, just as God was with them, God is with you. Like, and I am with you. Just like I was with Jacob, so I am with you. And like, you can understand then too, like the name that, what, of one of the names of Jesus, Emmanuel, God with us. And so that's what Jesus is saying. Like, I haven't left. I'm still with you, right? It's that express that comfort there as well, okay? All right, and so during this time, the Lord kind of reiterates the promises of the Abrahamic covenant with Jacob. And again, verse 15, kind of, my chapter behind, that's why. Verse 15, notice, behold, I am with you and will keep you, right? Like he, again, this emphasis that God is with his people, he is with Jacob. And Jacob kind of understands this. He names the place Bethel, which means house of God. He understands God is present and he is with me, all that. But then he still is kind of like Abraham, right? Where you have that faith, but then you have areas where you kind of still struggle to fully believe or all this stuff. And we see the same thing kind of with Jacob here. Okay, because yes, he believes that like God is here. Like I'm calling this place Bethel, house of God, because God is present, all that. But then look at verses 20 and 21, where Jacob makes this vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. Okay? So notice that kind of thing there, right? Where it's like, yeah, I believe like God is here, all that. But then he essentially almost like makes this bargain, almost like, okay, God, like if you do this, then you can be my God. Like, well, I'm your God regardless, right? Like kind of a thing. But it's almost kind of like, yeah, this kind of thing where it's like, yeah, if you do this, then I'll allow you the privilege of being my God, essentially. And so still room to grow, right? Still room to grow with his understanding of the Lord and his relationship to him, okay? But he eventually gets to the land of his relatives, all that. So he goes to with Laban, which is Rebekah's brother. So his uncle, all that, right? Like, and so then we see this interaction where Jacob ends up marrying Leah and Rachel. And so we have Laban come on the scene, Rebekah's brother. And what you need to know about Laban is he is also a schemer, kind of like Jacob, but much better at it than Jacob. Okay, so a better schemer here. But even despite that, you're going to see what? God is with Jacob, though, and he will fight for him. And all that. And so even though Laban might be the better schemer, God's plan is still going to move forward. Okay, God will still protect him and all that. And so remember the story. Jacob loves Rachel, wants to marry her. Laban agrees that he can marry her if he works for him for 7 years. Jacob does it, works that 7 years, and then they hold a feast, and Laban schemes and gives who? To Jacob during the night? Leah, right? Not Rachel, Leah, Rachel's sister. And then Jacob confronts Laban about it, and he has all his reasons, all that. But then Laban tells him to finish the week of the wedding, and then he agrees, I'll also give you Rachel if you kind of work another 7 years, okay? Like, and so he agrees that. And again, because Laban's not dumb, right? He understands, like, hey, like, God's been blessing this guy. He's working for me, like, and we're being blessed. And so I get a whole nother 7 years out of this, right? Like, that works out pretty well. And so he is scheming as well, okay? And so you have this whole situation with Leah and Rachel, both the wives of Jacob, which isn't a great situation, right? There's some conflict, division there. And that's what we see, right, as this kind of continues. But even though there's kind of division amongst the family, we see it doesn't prevent God's plan from moving forward. And because what kind of ends up happening kind of in this next section here, the end of 29 into kind of chapter 30 here, is kind of the jealousies or different things ends up happening. And they end up kind of bearing a lot of kids, right? Having a lot of children, to where I think one scholar put it like they're having like a childbearing competition almost kind of a thing going on here. But again, part of making them a great nation is kind of continuing forward. But don't miss verse 31 of chapter 29, because what do we know about Rachel? She was what? Barren, okay? And so what do we know? When she conceives, then what? That person's going to be significant. And who's she end up, who's that guy? Joseph, right? He's pretty significant person in all this. Okay. All right. So God causes Jacob to prosper and all that. Like in, during this time with Laban, God is with him, blessing him, all these things. And so Jacob realizes, though, he needs to get what? Back to the land, right? There's still this Abraham covenant. There's these aspects where there's the land involved. And so Jacob knows he needs to get back. And so he tells Laban, I need to go. And so they end up kind of striking this deal. You guys remember this? They kind of agree that Jacob will take all the flock that is like speckled or spotted and every black lamb, like all the flock like that. And they kind of agree, like, oh, yeah, it sounds great, all that. And then you guys remember what Laban does? Kind of, he takes all those, like, he sends all those away, right? So they're no longer like, oh, I don't know what happened to them, right? They're all gone. And so there's none left, okay? So he kind of, again, like, schemes his way out of this. And this is where Jacob kind of does his scheming, right? He's like, okay, I got this plan. Where, what does he do? He takes some sticks and he kind of peels them so that the white inside is exposed, and he places them near like where the animals would breed, all that. And what? In his mind, it's this idea of, oh yeah, like when they see these white streaks, like when they're mating, like they're going to bear like speckled and spotted animals. Is that how genetics kind of works? No, right? Like that's ridiculous. And even people speculate, even back then, that wasn't really like a believed thing very much, right? But this is just Jacob's, again, scheme. And what? You could say, well, what? It worked, didn't it? It did. But why? Was it because that's just, oh, we found a way to make spotted, speckled animals, right? Just strip a thing. No. Because who made it work? God. And again, it's that Jacob schemes, God redeems. That Jacob has these plans, but then God is the one who actually makes it work, okay? Not because Jacob is so smart and all these things, but rather it's because God is with him, okay? Again, continually emphasizing that. And so in spite of Laban's scheme, what? God's plan moves forward. All right, and so he has grown, right? Jacob has grown in terms of offspring. He has more kids now. He has more possessions. Main thing still missing is the land, so he needs to get back. And so what does he decide to do? He flees. Okay. I know, yeah. Ephraim has a lot to say. All right. And so as he realizes he needs to get back to the land, God assures him, verse 31, like return, verse 3 of chapter 31, return to the land of your fathers, and what? I will be with you. Again, that emphasis there. But then again, we see what's Jacob's plan here? He waits till Laban goes away to shear his sheep and all that, and then what? They all like flee, right? He takes all his wives, the children, all that, all his possessions, and goes. Okay, just kind of flees. Doesn't tell Laban, just kind of like, all right, let's sneak off. But Was that like a great plan? No. There's a couple of reasons, right? First of all, do you move really quick with a bunch of children and livestock? No. Which you see that unfold. It only takes them a couple of days and they catch up, right? It's like, where do you think you're getting there, right? Where do you think you're going? But then second, even more significant, like the culture of that time, you have to understand that since Jacob and his family were all like, and all his possessions were under the roof of Laban, they're all under his, they were kind of, he was kind of, Laban was considered the head over all of that. Okay, he was the head over all of it. And so if you one day suddenly just disappear with his daughters and his grandchildren and some of his possessions, all that, then what have you done? Essentially like kidnapping and theft, right? Like that's a big deal. To the point where this could have been punishable by even like death potentially. Okay, and you even see like verse 29 where Laban... Wait, was it 29? Let me see what chapter I'm in. Oh, 31. Wrong chapter. So 29, where Laban makes the statement, it is in my power to do you harm. Right? When he confronts me, he's like, it is in my power to do you harm. Essentially, I have the right to do something about this. And so Jacob's plan is not good. Okay, it's not a very good plan. But then notice the rest of verse 29, that even though he has the power to do harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. And so what? God intervened. So again, Jacob schemes, God redeems. Or even in Jacob's kind of messed up plans that don't really work very well, God redeems the situation and makes the plan work. Okay? And you start to see that Jacob kind of starts to recognize that ultimately, all that he has is due to the Lord being present and with him and all that. Like verse 42 says, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. Okay, so he understands, like, if God wasn't involved, I would have nothing, essentially. So he's starting to learn here. All right, and so Jacob and Laban, they go their separate ways. And so Jacob has kind of dealt with one obstacle, but what's the other obstacle that's kind of going to be have to deal with before he could fully enter the land and all that? Esau. So that's the next obstacle, Esau. And so figuring out, okay, what do I do with that? Because last time we left that off, what? Esau is like, I'm going to kill you, like causing him to flee. And so he has to deal with this. And so once again, we see this struggle of Jacob to fully believe and trust the Lord in this because, again, he develops his different schemes. The first one, verses 7 and 8, what he ends up doing is dividing his camp into two separate camps. And his thought was, well, if Esau comes and attacks one of the camps, then maybe the other camp can get away. But then what? In doing that, you're also just like weakening your camp to where... having just two weaker camps, essentially, is what's going on. So not great. And then he prays to the Lord, asking for help, which, again, that's great. That's a good step in that right direction. But then kind of immediately after that, he develops his other scheme to, like, okay, well, maybe I'm going to essentially try to bribe Esau, where he gets this huge gift to send to him with a bunch of livestock and all these goods and everything as essentially kind of a bribe of, hey, let's ease the tension. Here you go, all right? Like, take these things and don't kill me kind of a thing. So again, still struggling to fully trust the Lord in this. All right. And then that leads into kind of the end of chapter 32, where in this process, we have this Jacob wrestles with God. Okay, so again, another part of his plan, he sends kind of his wives and kids, like, across, like, the Jabbok River and everything, the stream, and then stays alone by himself. Again, trying to protect them, all this stuff, which, again, isn't a great plan because if your children could cross the stream, I'm sure Esau and his men could easily do that as well, right? Like, and get them if he really wanted. But while Jacob is alone, as maybe you know the story, wrestles with this man that we end up knowing is, like, God in some way. Okay, But we have to understand kind of what is going on here, because we're like, well, what is the point of this? And really, what this is kind of reenacting Jacob's life up to this point, right? It's really reenacting Jacob's life up to this point where God is revealing that Jacob has always been a wrestler. He's always been a schemer, right? He keeps doing that. And if you guys remember, like, as a wrestling, there's a certain point where it seems like Jacob's kind of winning, right? Do you guys remember that? It almost seems like, oh, he's like got him. But then what? God just kind of like touches his hip and like dislocates his hip, like kind of thing, right? Like all that. And just to show what? God was always in control, even when Jacob thought he was kind of like winning in a sense. And that's really, again, the picture of Jacob's life. That throughout his life, he keeps thinking like he is winning and all his schemes are working. He's doing all these things. But in reality, who's in control? God. God is always in control. And so that really, this wrestling match is to show that and helps us interpret all this to, again, the idea of Jacob's schemes with God redeems. God has always been in control. Even in this, even Jacob is wrestling, struggling, scheming, all these things, but God is always in control during this whole time. Okay? And then we see, right, that God asks Jacob, like, what his name is. Again, not because he didn't know, but rather, again, for Jacob to realize that not only his name Jacob, but you've always kind of been a Jacob in your life. You're the schemer, all that. But then notice, what does God do? He changes Jacob's name to what?
Israel.
And this is important because the name Israel can kind of mean like he fights or strives with God, but also even a probably better translation is God strives or fights. And so the implication being God fights for you, essentially, is what that name entails. And so this is what Jacob needs to understand, that he has striven with God, yes, and he has striven with men and prevailed, but it was not because of his own strength or cunning, but rather it is because God fights for him. Okay, that's what he needs to understand. And again, remember, patriarch, foundation of the nation of Israel. And so this is also true for the nation of Israel as well, as a whole, that they need to understand that God fights for them. And that's what we see throughout the whole Old Testament as well. God will fight for his people. He will be with them. Okay? And then Jacob calls the place Peniel, which means the face of God, confirming what we said, like he's wrestling with God kind of thing. And so, again, even though he's heading in the right direction, he's still kind of struggling a little bit. And we see that here. Let's see if we can wrap this up. See if we can get to, I don't know if we can get to Joseph, but that's right. Let's get through this at least. Okay, so after this wrestling match, chapter 33, Jacob comes the time for Jacob to meet Esau, kind of encounter him. But then Jacob kind of hatches here another plan. Do you remember kind of what he does here? Whereas Esau is coming to him, he divides his family into three groups. He kind of puts the servants and their kids in the front. He puts Leah and her kids behind them, puts Rachel and her kid, Joseph, in the back. And so essentially, if you wanted to know how much your dad loved you, this was the moment. This is where you ranked of, oh, I'm like seven? Oh, gosh. Like, okay. Like, or if you're the one out front, hate to break it to you, right? Because what's the plan, right? Is like if Esau starts attacking, then what? The ones in the back have a better chance to get away. That's really the plan, right? And so essentially, you right off the bat, you know, like, well, I'm not the favorite. And who is? Joseph, right? And we'll see that play out. But right away, you know what's going on here. And you know exactly where you rank in your father's love right here. All right? And so, again, not exactly trusting the Lord with this. But again, God redeems it. And they end up having this peaceful interaction. And all that as well, right? And so God redeems it. They end up going their separate ways. Esau returns to kind of land of Edom, Seir, and then Jacob goes to the land of Canaan and settling in Shechem. Okay, and real quick, let's see if we can do these real quick. So we got to make some headway. All right, chapter 34, as they're in Shechem, we have the defiling of Dinah here. Where one of Jacob's daughters, Dinah, is essentially like raped by Shechem, the prince of that land. And then Shechem tells his father, like, hey, I want to marry this girl. And so upon learning this this terrible event, you would expect Jacob to, take some sort of action against this. But what does he do? Nothing, essentially, right? Like, and potentially another element of him scheming, where he's like, oh, maybe we could use this to our advantage here. Because as we see a little bit later, they speak about potentially like trading with each other, getting property in the land, even intermarrying, which is what God warned against, right? Like, they're not supposed to be doing this, right? This is a terrible situation. And so Jacob not only is not only taking action for what was done to his daughter, but then he's trying to kind of unite with the Canaanites. So overall, terrible situation. Which is why eventually, like, you can see why God ends up needing to get them out of the land, right? When they go to Egypt and all that, because this connection with the Canaanites needs to get them kind of out. But you start to see the beginnings of that here. All right. But notice, in contrast to Jacob, who doesn't really do anything upon hearing this, her brothers respond very well? No, they're not happy, right? To say the least, about this. And so they develop their own plan, essentially, where they kind of go tell Shechem and all that, like, hey, like, yeah, we'll give our sister to you as a wife, but you all, like, you and all the people in your city, like, all the men have to be circumcised, all right? So Shechem's like, great, let's do it. They do all that, and while they are all recovering, what do the brothers do? Go in and wipe them out, right? Like, kill all of them. Essentially Simeon and Levi, right? They're the ones who go through the town and kill like all the males, right? Like, they just wipe them out. And so while on one hand you could say like, well, at least they kind of did something, they responded better than Jacob. On the other hand, right, the crime only demanded what? That like Shechem be dealt with, right? Not all these other people. Okay. And so even though they acted kind of wrongly, they understood like this crime needed to be dealt with in some way. Okay. And that'll come back to play later on to keep that in mind, okay? But then even notice, right, verse 30 of this, when Jacob's kind of response to the actions of his sons, he's primarily concerned about himself, right? Even in the midst of all this, right, it's kind of like, you've brought trouble on me, right? Like, by doing this. Wrong thinking here, okay? All right, and real quick, chapter 35, first part of that, we see Jacob return to Bethel. You see him return to Bethel. And what was significant about that? Remember that kind of ridiculous bargain that he made with God where, hey, if you are with me, bring me back here, all that, like, you'll be my God kind of a thing, right? And what? God brings him back to Bethel to say what? I did it, right? I did it. Here's the time, right? And that's why you then like have Jacob, he collects all the foreign gods they have, gets rid of all of them, because what? He's like, the Lord is in fact God, right? He recognizes he is God. And so, we then see the Lord reminding and officially changing Jacob's name to Israel, reminding him like, you need to act like an Israel, not like a Jacob, okay? And then he reaffirms all the promises of the Abrahamic covenant to again show the Lord's plan is moving forward. And then you have the deaths of Rachel and Isaac. So Rachel dies as she gives birth to Benjamin, and you now have all the 12 sons of Jacob who will be the 12 tribes of Israel and everything. But also notice something significant, a small detail, but ends up being significant later on. At the end of this section, or is it in verse 22, so not quite at the end, it talks about while Israel lived in that land, Reuben, one of his sons, right, like went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard of it. And so that's kind of a strange situation, but the reason behind it, right, back in that culture, this action was normally due, like this action was done to kind of assert your authority, either as like the new king or essentially to like you're the rightful heir, okay? And so Reuben is either trying to like usurp his father's authority, or he's trying to assert that he's kind of the rightful firstborn and heir of the 12 sons, right? Because we have to, again, remember in Genesis for the narrowing of, okay, now there's 12 sons. Who's the line going to go through? We need to figure that out. And so Reuben seems to be kind of like, I'm the one, right? It's going to be through me. But in kind of that ironic twist, in doing this immoral act to try and assert his dominance, Reuben actually loses his dominance, right? He loses his dominance. And from this point forward, he's kind of just the wannabe firstborn, okay, where he's going to keep doing actions to try to make it seem like he has authority within the family when he really doesn't, okay? And we'll see that on display. All right, and then Isaac dies, and Esau and Jacob bury him. And then last thing we'll cover for today is just the generations of Esau, where we have these mentioned again, where even though they're outside kind of the chosen line, God is still making them into a nation and receiving some sort of that blessing, right, where they grow into a nation just as he had proclaimed. Okay? All right, so that's where we'll wrap up for tonight, and we'll pick up with Joseph and all that next time.